All of them except for the one in Alana's flat.
Alana's flat. Tara glanced at the keys in her hand once more. She couldn't have stood in front of the caravan trying key after key, but she could do it in the mill. Was this really her plan? Break into all the suspects' homes and do a search? If she could just force people into telling the truth and nothing but the truth. Were you able to tell how they were disabled in the first place?
I'm afraid it's a simple setting, if you know what you're doing.
I didn't do it. You didn't do it. Who did?
I'm ahead of you on that one. There's one camera that never shut off.
What? Where? Danny pointed to the corner of Johnny's office where bits of straw were poking out. She moved closer until she could make out the curved shape. A bird's nest, Tara said. It's a bird's nest.
It's a decoy, Danny said. That's where the camera is hiding.
Have you accessed it?
I was waiting for you.
He pointed to the laptop that was set up on Johnny's desk. Tara glanced at the bird's nest. Why did you disguise the camera in the first place?
Danny's face reddened and he glanced away.
Me? Tara said. You were spying on me?
Danny shoved his hands in his pockets. You're a stranger. This is Johnny's livelihood.
I understand.
I hated being sneaky.
I had to consider you a suspect too.
Danny nodded. A sad smile played across his face. I've decided to trust you. Do you trust me?
I want to.
That'll have to do.
He walked to the laptop and brought up their account for the security system.
The camera is rewound to just before they were disabled. Soon we'll have our culprit.
Tara's finger tingled. He pushed play. The screen came alive with a shot of Johnny's office from behind the bird's nest. The other camera was in the opposite corner. They would have a clear shot of the guilty party. There were a few seconds of silence and then Johnny's door opened and a man slipped in, dragging a ladder. He was wearing a navy tracksuit with a hood and he had it pulled up and over his head. He made sure never to look directly at the camera, the one he knew about in the far corner of the room. He was short but muscular and sturdy.
That looks like Ben Kelly, Danny said, breaking and entering.
He glided straight over to the camera and leaned the ladder against the wall. He kept his face averted until he had the camera shut off. He descended the ladder and folded it up. He turned. Clueless, he was still on camera, his face visible. It was Ben Kelly, all right. He hovered near Johnny's desk, eyeing it.
What is he looking for?
Tara asked.
Whatever it is, he's breaking several laws already.
Ben Kelly slid open the middle desk drawer and began to root around.
Do you think Alana knows?
Danny bit his lip.
I doubt it. The two don't exactly see eye to eye.
Ben Kelly knelt and opened the bottom drawer. She's been lying to him about going to cooking school. Tara hadn't been sure if she was going to spill the beans on that one until it was already out of her mouth.
What?
Danny said.
It's no surprise she didn't notice a shard of glass in my salmon. She only took a 12-week class last spring, and even then she wasn't a stellar student.
And you know this
how?
I visited the school. Ben Kelly moved on to the next drawer. Tara didn't take her eyes off him. I wonder if he's after the same papers the lawyer asked for. Ben Kelly stood holding a folder. He tucked it underneath his arm and grabbed the ladder with the other hand.
And looks like he got it, Danny said.
Did Johnny keep copies anywhere? Danny shrugged.
Not that I'm aware.
We can confront Ben Kelly with this tape, or the guards.
We can, but he's never going to give us the correct documents back.
Then we don't go to the guards first. We threaten to go to the guards unless he gives the folder back.
You stay here. I'll handle this.
Danny headed for the door.
You're not doing this on your own, says the woman who's been doing this all on her own.
That's because you're a suspect too.
You're not keeping me away from Ben Kelly, You're right, but I am going with you.
They found him in the ring of Kelly just as one of his coaching sessions was ending. Sweaty lads bounced out as Tara and Danny entered. Tara had the footage from the camera on a USB stick, and it was tucked safely in the pocket of her jeans. Ben Kelly looked at the pair of them and shook his head.
Look what the wind blew in.
We need to talk, Danny said.
If it's about the violations, talk to the city planners.
Ben Kelly held his arms up as if surrendering.
We plan on it, Danny said.
And the guards too,
Tara said.
Unless you give us back our folder.
Danny looked at her.
I thought we'd ease into that.
Does he look like a man who is capable of easing into things?
She pointed at Ben, who was bouncing around one of his punching bags.
What are you on about?
Ben said.
We have you on camera breaking into the mill, disabling cameras, and rooting through Johnny's desk. You left with a folder. I'm assuming it's the same folder the city planners have asked us to produce, even if the folder is empty, which I'm guessing it's not. You could still be in a lot of trouble.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I'd think twice about spreading lies.
She's telling the truth, Danny said.
We've got the proof.
What you didn't know was there was another camera in the opposite corner of Johnny's office.
Ben's mouth dropped open.
I knew there was something funny about that bird's nest.
What were you looking for?
Ben Kelly headed for his office without glancing back. Danny and Tara exchanged a look and then followed. Ben opened a drawer in his desk, removed a folder, and then threw it on top.
This is what I took.
He handed it to Danny. Tara tried not to take it personally and looked over his shoulder. The folder contained a report from a private investigator. Ben Kelly's name and photo were on the front page.
Johnny had an investigator on you.
Ben's face was already red with fury.
He thought he could dig up dirt on me, blackmail me, or shame me into giving up my quest for the mill.
His hands started to shake. He turned to pour himself a glass of water. He opened a bottle of pills, hands trembling through every step.
He was convinced I had something to do with his missing pig. Why on earth would I be taking such a hideous thing?
To ruin his reputation?
Danny suggested. Ben scoffed.
He'd have been doing a good job of that in his own life.
What's in this report you don't want anyone finding out?
Tara asked. She didn't expect a direct answer, but it couldn't hurt to rile him up and gauge his reaction.
Ben Kelly glared. I simply wanted to find out what was in it. As it turns out, there's nothing. See for yourself, if you can stay awake. Johnny found nothing.
He slammed his hands on the desk.
Because I've done nothing wrong.
It seemed to Tara that a person who had done nothing wrong wouldn't go to such lengths to assure them that he had done nothing wrong. She continued applying pressure.
How did you know Johnny had hired an investigator?
Ben sunk into his desk chair and began to fidget. His nervous energy would drive Tara crazy. Just watching him was exhausting.
Emmett told me.
Tara perked up at this.
Emmett?
Ben nodded. He'd been at the mill a lot on this journey for that blasted pig. He thought he saw a folder with my name on it. When he asked Johnny about it, Johnny got defensive, said it was best to know your enemy. Then I caught the guy. Not very smart to tail a man on a bicycle when you're in a car.
You don't drive?
Haven't in years,
Ben said.
I'm prone to seizures.
He nodded to the bottle.
Medicine helps, but there's no guarantee. Gave me license up long ago.
So he couldn't have been in the car that ran me off the road.
We're never giving up the mill, Tara said.
Ben Kelly nodded again.
I filed those violation complaints before Emmett was killed and Johnny went missing. Now with Carrig's murder, I don't want the mill anymore. It's nothing but bad luck.
That was at least one problem Johnny wouldn't have to worry about when or if he ever returned.
Was Johnny having anyone else tailed or just you?
Tara asked.
I stopped when I found my folder. I didn't see any others.
The guards hadn't been as thorough going through his desk as Tara would have liked. It didn't appear as if they'd removed anything from it. If Johnny was digging up dirt on the residence, who knows what he uncovered? And if this private investigator wasn't doing such a good job of being private, then Johnny could have thoroughly ticked off the wrong person. She scanned the report. I don't see the name of the investigator.
I do, Danny said, pointing to a name in the corner.
Paul Elliott, Tara said.
You'd have met him,
Danny said. Tara was startled. Me?
He's also the publican at O'Doul's. He's a retired copper.
All right, he makes lovely napkin maps. The two of them just stared at her. I'm thinking I could use a pint, Tara said to Danny.
You?
Chapter 29. They found Paul behind the bar with a foot up on the ice bin, toothpick in his mouth, watching a rugby match. The only thing Tara knew about the game was that men didn't do much talking when a match was on, although there was often a fair bit of hollering. She and Danny sat and sipped pints while they waited. When there was a break in the game, Danny waved Paul over. He slid Ben Kelly's folder over to him. Paul glanced at the folder, then gave a curt nod.
Are you looking to hire me, or is this an inquisition?
Did my uncle ask you to investigate anyone other than Ben Kelly?
That's between me and Johnny Meehan.
Because if he did, Danny said, and you dug up something about someone that they didn't want anyone else knowing.
That's the one who could be our killer, Paul filled in. Tara nodded.
You're saying something in my reports caused someone to kill Emmett or Carrick.
Danny stepped in.
We're simply saying we won't know what the possibilities are until we see what the investigation's unearthed. Have to follow every breadcrumb.
Yes, Tara said. I'm pretty sure Johnny would be fine with you sharing your results with us.
Why don't you just go through his papers?
We did, Tara said. We didn't find anything else. I didn't even find this when I looked, and that was before... She stopped herself, not wanting to give away the bit about catching Ben Kelly breaking in.
Before?
Paul asked, eyebrow raised. Before I found Ben's report.
Wait, Danny said. What do you mean?
He sounded defensive.
I've been going through his papers since I first came to the mill, Tara said, trying to understand the business.
Do you think you just hadn't gotten to this folder? Or it wasn't there?
That was a good question.
I can't say for sure, but if it wasn't there, and then it was, that could only mean that someone removed it and then put it back.
Either they wanted us to find it, or they rifled through it and removed incriminating evidence.
Paul removed his foot from the ice bin and frowned. Tara leaned in eagerly.
Do you have a copy of your original report?
He squinted.
I might.
He did.
You can at least give us that, can't you?
Why don't you leave this folder with me and I'll compare it to my original? If anything is missing, I'll let you know.
Tara wanted to argue, insist that he hand over the original to them, but New York stubbornness, as strong as it was no match for old stock Irish stubborn.
Deal, Danny said. He stuck out his hand and the two men shook on it. Tara rolled her eyes and drank the rest of her pint.
Now what? Danny said as they exited O'Doul's. I'm going to see the real estate agent to find out who checked out the retail shop, Tara said. Then I have to work on a few vision boards.
Vision boards?
It's for a client in New York. I create poster boards where I play around with design ideas.
Will you show me sometime?
Sure, she hesitated. I've also created one to help solve these murders. Danny came to an abrupt stop, and Tara plowed into him.
That's a fantastic idea, he said.
Tara sighed.
It's not really getting me anywhere.
Keep at it. You never know what will break loose.
What are you going to do with the rest of the day?
Our solicitor is going to ask for an extension on the violation and evictions. With Johnny missing, he feels it could qualify.
The longer we keep them at bay, the better.
Agreed.
We also need to visit George O'Malley again. Use the granite slab as an excuse.
Okay, but what's the real reason?
He was holding something back. With Carrig murdered, maybe he'll be ready to talk. And I want to have another look at that theater light Carrig wanted back so badly.
Why don't we go tomorrow?
Perfect. Danny grinned.
It's a date.
It's not a date.
He winked. Whatever you say.
She watched his broad shoulders flex as he strolled away. Not a date, she called after him. Heather Milton was not in her office. It was locked tight. Tara had left 3 messages and the woman wasn't calling her back. Back. Was she purposely avoiding her, or was Tara just being paranoid? The retail space was a great location, so whoever had rented it was doing Irish Revivals a favor. Maybe it was time to open the shop. With Johnny gone, none of the usual mill customers were calling. Business was at a standstill. And if they did get shut down, there would be nothing to fall back on. Tara would start bringing over pieces to the shop and officially open. She was tired of all this murder business. She was itching to do something creative and fun. But today, she had to finish the vision boards for Victoria's client in New York, or she would no longer have that to fall back on either. She settled into the shop, opened the garden doors, and began to immerse herself in the boards. By the time she was done, she had what she felt was a fantastic living room. There was a suede sofa the color of burnt orange with a bamboo coffee table. Silver sculptures helped modernize the look. She found old industrial lights in the mill, large dome shades the color of emeralds. She took photographs of them, had them printed at a local shop, and added them to the vision board. Time no longer held any meaning as she worked. A throw rug, the color for the walls, artwork, additional seating. Before she knew it, the board was complete. She hurried to the post office to mail the boards to New York, then picked up fish and chips from the seafood restaurant by the bay and ate them on a bench in Air Square. It made her think of her time here with Brianna. They'd had fun. Tara needed fun and friendship. She sent her a text. Let's get together soon. She finished her lunch, hoping to hear back from Brianna, then strolled back to the retail shop, taking in the sights and sounds of Galway in the summer. Street performers were out again, including the unicycling knife juggler. She thought of Carrig, the knife in his back. Were the guards getting anywhere? Were there any clues? Cameras? Did the knife yield anything? She went back to the retail shop and stared at her vision boards for the murders. She added retail shop to the list, as well as investigative report on Ben Kelly, files missing. She added items to the timeline. Ben Kelly disabled the cameras and stole his file. Paul, aka private investigator, checking original file against one, returned by Ben. Heather Milton not returning my calls. She glanced at the granite slab in the corner and hoped their second visit to George O'Malley would give her something a little more substantial to add to the boards. George agreed to meet with them again on Thursday after his trad session. 2 days from now. Tara made a note of it and tacked it to her vision board of the murders. There was something about what Paul said about his investigations for Johnny that was bothering her. She just couldn't figure out what exactly, but her mind kept circling around it. On a napkin, to associate the note with Paul, she wrote, Paul's investigations for Johnny. She tacked it to the vision board and then added more. Which pieces were the most puzzling? Tattoo proposal, Paul's investigations, forgery of the pig, Carrig inflating theatre budget, the theatre light? Had Sergeant Gable looked into Carrig's bank accounts? If he was skimming from the theatre, what had he planned on doing with the money? Was that
even important?
She headed over to see Rose. She would get the answer to the proposal once and for all. The note on the caravan door read, "In session." Tara opened the door anyway. Rose was sitting at her table in front of a spread of cards. Hamlet was sitting across from her, tears streaming down her face.
"Get out,"
Rose said. Tara ignored her and turned to Hamlet.
"Why are you crying?"
The young woman's eyes widened. Tara moved closer.
"Why are you still here?"
"Carrick's blood is on my hands,"
she wailed.
"It's all my fault."
Chapter 30. Tara escorted the actress to the Garda station.
"I'm not normally a gossip. I never knew the information would be used to blackmail him,"
Magda said. She sounded sincere. Then again, she was an actress. Apparently there was a reason Carrick had decided to do an all-female production of Hamlet, and it had nothing to do with supporting women. In his last production, he had had a hard time keeping his hands to himself around some of the male actors. These were the rumours Magda, Hamlet, had referred to when Tara was trying to convince her to break into his phone. She should have followed up then, but she'd been too distracted. "Was he accused of forcing any of them?" Tara asked.
"Nobody filed any official complaints," Hamlet said. "But his reputation was starting to get out. Every male actor he had offered the part of Hamlet to had turned him down."
If there were no legal ramifications, why pay a blackmailer?
"His reputation. He thought this production would revive his reputation. He'd been bragging about the bold idea of having an all-female cast."
"And if reviewers and theatre bigwigs found out it was all tied to his past scandals?"
"The show would have been panned."
"How did you find out he was being blackmailed?"
"He flew into a rage at rehearsal the day he was killed. Hinted that one of us was a traitor. Sharing vicious gossip. Costing him. Costing the theatre. I didn't realise he meant literally."
A woman was hurrying out of the guard station when Tara and Hamlet approached. She looked so familiar. When her head turned their way, Tara saw that it was Lady B. What was she doing here? She made eye contact with Tara, then bowed her head and hurried away. Brianna was at the reception desk. "Is Lady B okay?" Tara asked. Brianna leaned forward. "She's a bit shocked."
"About what?"
Brianna glanced at Hamlet.
"I can't say."
"You're right, I'm sorry." Tara should know better than to pry in anyone else's business.
"I'm sure you'll hear soon enough,"
Brianna said. Tara explained that Hamlet had information on Carrick's case.
"That's two," Brianna said. "I wonder what the third will be."
"Two?" Brianna looked stunned.
"Just an expression. You know, things come in threes."
Right. Lady B had come to the station with information on Carrick's case. Tara left Hamlet at the station. One more piece of the puzzle was in place. Carrick was being blackmailed, so he inflated the theatre budget to pay the person off. If he was paying, why was he killed? Tara had just left the station when Rose appeared in front of her, concern stamped on her face.
"Is she going to be okay?"
"She'll feel better when she tells them everything." Tara stared at Rose.
"So will you."
Rose stared back, then nodded. "Walk with me," Tara said.
"I have to head to the shop."
"What do you want to know?"
"Did you attack me in the funhouse?"
"Attack is the wrong word," Rose said. "I was just trying to scare you away from prying any further. Johnny was worried about you. You're the one who bit me."
"Did you leave the stem of a rose on the porch of the cottage?"
"Yes. You're terrible at heeding warnings."
"Did Johnny show you his tattoo?"
Rose stopped.
"Tattoo?"
She shook her head.
Johnny doesn't have a tattoo.
I think you'd better double check, Tara said.
So he never went through with the proposal. Why not?
I don't know where he is, Rose said. Did you try and run me off the road?
Of course not.
Were you blackmailing anyone?
Blackmail? Don't be absurd.
Did you steal Grace's harp?
No, she gave it to me.
You saw her?
Rose looked away.
Please, it could be important.
Rose seemed to shrink.
She left it at the door, to my caravan with that nasty note.
Tears came to her eyes and she clamped her lips shut.
Thank you, Tara said.
She hurried away, eager to get to the new shop, stand in front of her boards, and fill in some blanks.
Tara stared at her timeline. Her eyes landed on the banker from Manchester, then the artist from Donegal. Had the police called either of them yet? Most likely they'd been too busy with murder probes to get to the forgery case. Besides, with the client deceased, who was there to press charges? She checked the dates of Paul's investigation. Paul wasn't just hired to dig up dirt on Ben. Apparently he was also tasked with finding the missing pig. That was before the forgery was arranged. Why didn't she see it before? There was only one reason to hire someone to find a missing item. Johnny had had the original pig, so where was it now? And who took it? Whoever that person was, he or she would have heard about the second pig. He or she would have known it was a forgery. A secret that could have taken Irish revivals down. Johnny was right. This was all about taking him down. Tara hurried back to the salvage mill and stared at the vision boards. She had brought them from the shop to the mill, hoping that having them close would break something open. Carrig's light. George said the light was malfunctioning. She was starting to see the light herself. Carrig, so desperate to get an item back despite not having a theatre or even permanent home to hang it. And no matter how many times she revolved through the suspects, one kept coming back. Only one was really at the centre of it all, deftly weaving out of the way, causing trouble behind the scenes. From the beginning, the writing had indeed been on the wall. But before she could go accusing someone of murder, there were two more people Tara desperately needed to speak with. Stephen Kane at the tattoo shop and Heather Milton. As soon as she had the last two pieces to the puzzle from them, she would be able to unmask a murderer. She grabbed her purse and headed for the tattoo shop. Tara was headed for the Garda station, armed with her accusation, when her mobile rang.
Hello? I'm on the ferry. Where are you?
It was Danny, and he sounded as if he was shouting through the wind. She stopped. The wind whipped through her.
The ferry? You said to meet you?
Oh, God.
It wasn't me.
What?
I didn't leave you that message.
Static spiked through the phone.
I'll catch the next ferry, Tara said. Stay with people. Go to the pub. Stay with large groups of people. Do anything you can to stall.
No, Danny said, sounding a continent away.
I have a bad feeling about this.
Listen to me. There was a high-pitched screech, and the phone went dead. Tara's hands were shaking as she called the guards. Brianna answered and listened, but explained there was insufficient reason to alert the authorities on the islands. Someone lying about a message wouldn't be seen as any cause for alarm. Tara texted Danny a warning just in case it went through. Then she jumped in a taxi and told him to drive like he stole it. It was impossible to make a ferry move faster than a ferry wanted to move. She had tried Danny a dozen times. No answer. She stared out at the endless waves and went over it in her mind. Everyone was right about one thing. It did all start with the pig owned by a princess. Emmett paid a good amount for the pig, and Johnny finally purchased it for him from the man in Manchester. Upon Johnny's return, it was stolen, thus forcing Johnny into hiring someone to forge a copy. In the meantime, Ben Kelly was working hard behind the scenes to take the mill, and Carrig Murray was skimming from his theatre to pay a blackmailer.
Carrig then sells a light to George way out in the Aran Islands, only to want it back almost immediately. The killer was cozy with all of them, directing the takedown of Irish revivals from behind the scenes. At the same time, the killer needed money, so that once the mill belonged to him or her, the killer had the funds to do what they wished. That's when the blackmail started, before the cast iron pig was stolen. Perhaps it was never supposed to go this far. If Johnny hadn't forged the pig, then maybe Emmett would have turned on Johnny, ruining his reputation and business. There was only one question Tara still had. Since Johnny was the intended target, why kill Emmett? Was he simply at the wrong place at the wrong time? No. The killer had upped the game. Instead of merely bringing down a man's business, why not bring down the man? Was Emmett killed to frame Johnny Meehan for murder? Or was Emmett about to point fingers at the killer for something else? For stealing? Hardly a reason to kill someone. No. Emmett was interfering in the killer's larger plan. The plan to take over the mill. The plan to live happily ever after. The proposal. Why not kill Johnny himself? Because Danny loved Johnny. He was the only one in town who did. Tara thought through it all once more, slowly. Emmett is killed. The forged pig breaks. The killer manages to pick up the cast iron body, stashes it in the inn. In haste, the killer leaves the head of the pig behind. Hours later, the killer must return to the crime scene to retrieve the head. That is when the killer wrote Tara on the wall, not before. Because by now the killer had met Tara, knew who she was and why she was in town. That doesn't mean there wasn't a name written on the wall. There had been. The name of the true killer. Emmett tried, while dying, to name his killer. That explained the carpet of blood from the wall to the front door. Emmett crawled to the wall to name his killer, but he didn't get to complete the job before he died. The killer returned and saw what had transpired. It would have been impossible to wash off the name painted in blood, so the killer wrote over the name and changed it to Tara. That's why the letters were so bizarre. The killer then dragged the body back into the doorway. The guards had to have figured out that the body had been dragged around, but never made it public. Had they figured out why? The killer hadn't wanted anyone to come into the cottage until they were long gone, and placing the body directly in the doorway would accomplish just that. Which meant the killer returned after meeting Tara that morning, but before Tara discovered the body. The killer also did the dishes. It sounded ludicrous, yet those were the facts. Was there a particular reason for it, or was it some kind of psychological tic? Either while waiting for Emmett to show up, or after the killer returned for the rest of the murder weapon. Had the killer touched one of the dishes and thought washing them would wipe away fingerprints? Had Johnny Meehan been on some errand that morning? The killer had to have known that Johnny wouldn't be home until after Emmett was killed. Perhaps Johnny was in the mill after all. The killer typed the letter, diverting Emmett away from the mill and to Johnny's cottage. It was all part of the larger scheme, the killer's own Shakespearean drama, a new shop, a marriage proposal. The killer was in love. Carrig, in the meantime, most likely through Hamlet, had orchestrated a theft of his own. The cast iron pig. Carrig, sick of being blackmailed and led to believe Johnny was the blackmailer, stole the cast iron pig. Hamlet admitted she'd spied before, that she would do anything for Carrig. She must have been in the mill with Alana when the cast iron pig arrived. Either she stole it for Carrig or he stole it himself, but either way, he had a very good reason for stealing it. Leverage. To end the blackmail. Playing Emmett and Johnny against each other in a very dramatic fashion. The killer had already struck twice. Tara could only pray she wasn't too late to stop the third. In this case, three times would not be a charm.
On her way to the ferry, she had made her last phone call to Paul at the old men's bar. Chapter 31. Tara was so relieved to see George O'Malley in his chair outside the pub that she almost wept. She asked if he'd seen Danny, her heart in her throat as she waited his answer.
Aye, you just missed him. Stayed for a bite to eat and some music, then got some kind of message and headed up to the cliff.
Terror zipped through her.
The cliff? Aye, Don Angus, the fort, like.
Yes, I know. Hovering at the edge of a 300-foot cliff.
What's the fastest way there? The tour vans have all just pulled out. I guess it depends how fast your feet or your cycle will take you.
Tara glanced at the bicycles lined up, taunting her.
Great, she said.
Oh, you haven't broken your light, have you?
My light?
Your theatre light. Is it still intact?
Why wouldn't it be?
I'll let you know later. If you see any guards at all, will you send them up to the cliff? George raised his eyebrow.
You wouldn't be thinking of jumping off now, would you?
Tara was relieved she had decided to message Sergeant Gable while on the ferry. Whether or not he responded was another matter. She wouldn't be able to wait.
Can you call the local guard?
She asked George.
What's going on?
George wheeled closer to her, worry stamped on his face. I have to get up to the cliff. I'm pretty sure there's someone up there who wouldn't hesitate to push people over the edge. There were two options to cycle to the cliff. Either take the route with an incline, or the flat roads along the Seal Coast. Both routes were known to take around 30 minutes, but the Seal route was known to be more leisurely, as people stopped to take in the cute little creatures. Tara took the incline route, grateful that a sense of urgency fueled by adrenaline took a lot of the sting out of the trip. She was breathing heavily and drenched in sweat, but her ordeal wasn't over yet. From the bike park to the top of the cliff, it was a 15-minute walk. Tara would take it as fast as she could without drawing unwanted attention. She didn't want Danny to see her coming. The sight of the semicircular prehistoric stone fort perched over the Atlantic Ocean took Tara's breath away. For a second, she forgot she was here to confront a killer. The jagged stone walls were originally built to keep out attackers. This time, Tara was certain one was waiting inside the structure. If the answer to the proposal was no, was there going to be another death? Not if Tara could help it. She tried to blend in with the other tourists, keeping her sunglasses on and hood up, just like they'd used the costumes from Hamlet as a disguise during their reign of terror. Tara was out of breath by the time she reached Don Angus. Ahead, the ancient fort rose out of the ground, three massive dry stone walls from 1100 BC. She took in the wooden spikes of the cheviot de frise, a medieval anti-cavalry device. Beyond the remains of the fort, the cliff rose 300 feet above the thrashing ocean. Tara's heart began to tap dance at the thought of being so high, and she prayed she wouldn't have to get close to the edge. What exactly was her plan here? Just get Danny out in the open? Hope for a confession? The island had 80% cell service, but up here her phone had only a couple of bars. She hurried over and entered the fort. She scanned the tourists, moving quickly among them, drawing closer to the edge. And there he was, out at the very end. Danny, staring off at the ocean. At first, Tara didn't see anyone else with him, and her heart lifted with hope. But as she drew closer, she saw blonde hair blowing in the wind. Standing slightly behind him, rolling up her sleeve, was Alana Kelly. Stephen at the tattoo shop had confirmed her suspicion. Alana was the one with the rose tattoo. Heather had confirmed it was Alana who had rented the retail space, which meant it was Alana who had stolen the items to bring down Johnny, all but one. The cast iron pig, the one that really mattered. But it didn't quite start with the pig being stolen. Alana had set the deadly chain of events in motion by blackmailing Carrick. Hamlet had confided in her about the rumours that Carrick had been inappropriate with his male actors. Alana would need money to take over the mill once it was hers. The blackmail plot was hatched.
Paul had enlightened Tara about the line item missing from the report on Ben Kelly, the fact that his daughter was no longer in cookery school. Alana was the one who had deleted all mention of it from the report. Her father was controlling. He would have been enraged that she was no longer in school and would have demanded to know what happened to her tuition. Once her father started digging, he may have uncovered this entire plot. Alana was going to propose to Danny. The only real question left was, what was she going to do if he said no? When he said no? Tara couldn't give them time to find out. She picked up her pace. "Hey," she called, trying to sound chipper, wondering how to disguise her voice so it didn't seem as if she were approaching a woman who had already murdered two men just for this moment. Neither Danny nor Alana looked up. The wind was swallowing her words. Alana took a step back. She got down on one knee. Danny looked in Tara's direction, most likely trying to make sense out of what was happening. He didn't see Tara. She began to run toward them. Alana wanted the salvage mill, and she wanted Danny. In order to have them both, she needed Johnny Meehan gone. But Danny loved Johnny. Was that why she decided to spare his life and instead frame him for murder? Perhaps all she had originally planned was running Johnny out of business, scooping up the mill, and working day by day with her imagined lover, renting the retail shop that he had mentioned he had always wanted, running it all with money from Carrig. She had just assumed Johnny got the rose tattoo with the ring. It was Alana. Danny was staring at Alana's arm. He took a step back in the direction of the cliff. "Hey!" Tara shouted again, louder this time. "Danny!" He finally heard her, looked up, saw her. Alana's hands were holding onto Danny's arm. Danny was off balance, not expecting either the proposal or to see Tara headed for him. "Let go of him!" Tara shouted. Alana's head jerked her away, her eyes filled with tears. Danny had already said no. Alana let go of Danny and charged Tara. She lunged for her, grabbing both Tara's hands and dragging her closer to the edge of the cliff. Danny jumped in front of them. "Move back," Tara said. "She'll push us over." "What are you doing?" Danny yelled. Tara didn't know which one of them he was talking to. "She killed Emmett," Tara yelled. "And Carrig." A crowd was forming around them. "She wanted to frame Johnny for murder so she could have you and the mill." "She's lying," Alana said. "You're a liar." Alana lunged forward and shoved Tara. Tara stumbled, then fell. Her face hovered over the cliff. Time stopped. The jagged rocks, the height, the ocean ready to receive her. Maybe she should just let go. See Thomas again. Her mother. "Stop!" Danny yelled from above. Tara began to inch away from the cliff. She felt a shoe on the back of her neck. "Stop!" Danny pleaded with Alana. "What are you doing?" "I didn't mean for anyone to die," Alana said. "Emmett was crazed."
"Tell us what happened," Danny said. He knew he had to keep Alana distracted, keep her talking. If she was going to confess to anyone, it would be Danny.
"I'm sorry," she said.
"Tell me what happened," he repeated.
It was odd to lie on the ground with a foot pressed to her neck, listening to Alana's pleas to Danny. But it was working. She had let up some of the pressure. Tara concentrated on staying calm. "Emmett put it together that I was stealing from Johnny."
"How did he put it together?" Danny pressed.
"I suspect he snooped in my room at the mill, or he saw me bringing items into the retail shop. That was careless of me."
"Why didn't he just tell Johnny you were stealing from him?" Danny asked. "Or me?"
"He saw the cast iron pig wasn't in the shop. I told him I was doing Johnny's bidding, that I didn't know what happened to his pig, but I promised him I'd find out. He was so obsessed with getting it, he was willing to wait. He didn't know who to trust. But then I couldn't find it fast enough. He wouldn't stop hounding me.
I don't know what happened to his pig, but he wouldn't stop. He wouldn't stop, Danny.
Alana was making herself sound like the victim. She didn't feel the same pity when Johnny was framed for Emmett's murder, or when she wrote Tara's name on the wall in the blood of the man she had murdered. Framing other people was a game to her. Alana was still counting on Danny believing her sad stories.
Carrig stole the pig, Tara said.
It was difficult to speak, but Tara managed to get the words out. Alana's foot twitched.
What?
Alana's voice wavered above her. Danny picked up the thread. Carrig thought it was Johnny blackmailing him.
I didn't know any of that was going to happen, Alana said. How could I know?
How did you manage to collect the payments? Danny asked Alana. Make Carrig think it was Johnny blackmailing him and not you.
I sent typed letters. The drop-off point was at the mill. I made sure Johnny was never in for the drop-offs. He paid in cash.
Clever, Tara said. Alana must have told Carrig she had his granite slab to keep him happy. That's why Carrig was so squirrely about the granite slab. He didn't want to admit to being caught up in Alana's web of deceit.
But why?
Danny's voice was laced with horror. So she could be with you, run the mill and have the man of her dreams.
For you,
was all Tara could say.
Shut your gob,
Alana yelled, her foot pressed harder into Tara's neck.
Let her go,
Danny said. He took a step forward.
Stop, or I'll crush your neck,
Alana said. Tara believed her. Danny must have too, for he came to a halt.
Call guards, Tara uttered. It's over. Why don't you want to be with me?
Apparently Alana was still stuck in the past.
Carrig,
Danny said. His mind was still on the murders.
You killed him too? He had the pig all this time. He's the one who turned me into a killer. Johnny was supposed to be accused of stealing the other items and arrested. That's it. Nobody had to die, but Carrig couldn't keep his nose out of it. Carrig thought he could turn it all around, but all he did was turn Emmett into a raging lunatic over a pig. A stupid cast-iron pig. I still don't even know where it is.
You didn't give Carrig a chance to tell you, Tara thought. You stabbed him in the back. Carrig never spent the night at the inn. Alana is the one who had stashed the murder weapon in room 301. But Tara entered soon after. She noticed blood on the key. She could attest that Alana wouldn't allow Grace to let her stay in room 301 because room 301 was a bloody mess. It's where Alana had stashed the murder weapon, most likely showered and changed her clothes after the murder, then returned to the scene of the crime to fetch the head of the pig. Murdered Carrig to frame him as the killer, the only witness who could have refuted her story. Poor Carrig. Poor Emmett.
You switched the prop knives with a real one, Tara said.
She was getting more confident at speaking with the foot on her neck. If Alana wanted to crush her, she was going to do it whether Tara talked or not.
How did you know that?
Tara could hear the rage in Alana's voice. Truthfully, it was a shot in the dark. Even though the chef's training wasn't her idea, she would still have a set of sharp knives. And framing Magda Hamlet for the murder fit into Alana's devious pattern.
You just confirmed my suspicion. Think you're so smart, do you?
Or maybe she should have kept her mouth shut.
Was Hamlet aware of what you were doing?
Danny cut in, sensing that Tara had just wound Alana up again.
I thought she didn't have a clue, but she must have betrayed me too. Helped Carrig steal the pig.
We can talk about this later, Danny said.
The shoe pressed harder. Tara kicked as hard as she could and wiggled, trying to move away from the edge. Danny grabbed Alana around the waist and pulled her back. She clawed and kicked. Tara scrambled to her feet.
It's over,
Tara said. Alana leaned down and bit Danny. He let go with a yell. Alana rushed toward the edge and turned around. She glared at Tara.
This is your fault, and your uncle's.
She spit on the ground, pure fury stamped on her face. I'm going to jump, she screamed. But not alone. She grabbed Tara's arm and pulled. Tara stumbled and tried to pull back, but Alana succeeded in yanking Tara too close to the edge for comfort. Don't look down. Whatever you do, don't look down. Thomas, she whispered. Alana, don't do this, Danny said. He lunged and grabbed Tara's other arm. The crowd moved in closer.
Stay back,
Alana's voice carried through the wind, or the three of us go over together. The crowd stopped. Cameras around her clicked.
I was so close, she said. I can't go to prison.
Nobody's going to prison, Danny said. Whatever this is, we'll work it out. A tug of war began with Tara in the middle.
I'm sorry, Alana said. I would take it all back if I could. I love you, Danny. I did it for you.
Stop talking, Danny said. We'll go get a cup of tea, sit down, take a few breaths.
I just wanted to run Johnny out of business. I didn't mean for any of this to happen. Danny, you have to believe me.
Where is the original pig now? Danny asked. Tara knew he didn't really care. He was grasping at anything to keep Alana's focus. Hamlet. The light, Tara said. What? Poor Danny, he alone was in the dark. I think Carrig hid the pig in the theatre light, Tara said. First he wanted to get it out of the way, but when he learned a replica pig was the murder weapon, he knew the original was now precious evidence. That's why he was so desperate to get the light back.
He didn't suffer, Alana said. He never even knew it was coming.
She glanced behind her, taking in the same dramatic view of the drop, the ocean below. Danny stepped closer to Tara, and the three inched that much closer to the edge. This time Tara did look. The jagged rocks, the steep drop, the ocean thrashing below.
Be careful,
Tara whispered. Alana eyed Danny's hand. A pair of security guards were making their way toward them, keeping the crowd behind them. Alana took another step toward the edge. One more, and they would plummet 300 feet. The guards stopped. You've always had to fight for your place, Tara said. She wasn't going to tell her that it was all going to be okay, or that she wouldn't spend the rest of her life in jail. You have to face this, she said instead. You have to face it.
What do you know?
Alana said. I know how it feels to lose the most important thing in your life.
What?
Alana shouted.
What have you ever lost?
My son, Tara said. My 3-year-old son. His name was Thomas. Alana faltered. Tara caught Danny's eye, and together they stepped away from the cliff. One step, two steps. At three, they flanked Alana and took her to the ground. Chapter 32. Sergeant Gable met the Aran Island guards at the ferry. Danny and Tara remained behind to fill George in on what had happened. They stood in his kitchen near the theatre light. O'Malley crossed his arms.
I don't want to break it just to see if there's a pig inside.
The pig could fetch up a ton of money at auction, Danny said. Now that the pig was part of a murder mystery, its worth had probably skyrocketed. Human beings never failed to perplex Tara. George grabbed a broom and wheeled over to the light as if he was going to knock it down.
You could end up breaking both, Danny said.
He approached the light.
If you have some tools, I can take it apart properly. Would you like that now?
Ah, sure, look it.
George wheeled over to the cupboard beneath his sink and came out with a toolbox. Danny used the tools to open the light, stick his hand in, and remove the item. It was a cast iron pig, once owned by a princess. On the ferry ride back, Tara filled Danny in on how she put the pieces of the puzzle together.
Once I stood back and looked at the timeline and my vision boards, I could see the common denominator was Alana. The place used to be a mess, a junk heap. You even mentioned how Johnny's dishes were piled in the sink. And? Alana was cleaning the counters at the inn when I first met her. Her cooking instructor remarked how organized and clean she always was, and everyone said the mill used to be a junk heap.
Alana organized it.
Yes. Alana cleans compulsively. Sounds ludicrous she would do the dishes after a murder, but that's the power of a compulsion.
Danny stared out at the churning water.
What did Alana have over Carrig?
Apparently, he had a reputation of being handsy with male actors. None of them would work with him. Alana threatened to expose this to reviewers and ruin his all-female production of Hamlet.
I can't believe you pieced all this together.
Danny sounded impressed. There were other clues.
Go on.
Alana was the one with access to the stationery. She wrote a nasty note to Rose, pretending it was from Grace. She typed the letter that was left on the mill door, luring Emmett to Johnny's cottage. I bet the guards will find a typewriter in Alana's apartment.
Danny nodded. We often had antique typewriters in stock.
Johnny must have had an appointment that morning, and Alana knew he wouldn't be around. Or maybe he was in his office at the mill and never knew that Emmett was reading a note sending him to the cottage. It was Alana who got a tattoo of a rose on an engagement ring. He flushed scarlet.
I thought it was just a harmless crush.
He bowed his head.
I kissed her once. I had no idea she would become obsessed.
Tara thought as much. She put her hand on his arm.
It's not your fault.
Alana isn't well. If not you, she would have obsessed over someone else.
This is not on you.
You saw it right away. You mentioned it so many times. I just thought you were jealous. My name on the wall was the one clue that couldn't have been done by anyone else.
I don't understand.
Emmett used his last moments to try and write the name of his killer on the wall. She removed a brochure from the Aran Islands and a pen from her purse. She started to write, Alan.
Alan?
He didn't have time to finish. Tara began to scribble over it, replicating the look of Tara on the wall.
Danny gave a low whistle. She turned Alan into Tara.
Tara nodded. That's why the letters are so weird. Capital T, a giant one, then a capital A to change the L and on down the line.
My God, he stopped.
She was trying to frame you next. I do believe that's where she was headed. And I'm sure folks around here would have preferred it was the awful American.
Danny stepped closer.
Not all of us, he said. And then he kissed her. The next 10 days passed in a blur of reunions and police interviews. When Grace Quinn summoned Tara for a cup of tea, she accepted. Now that justice had been delivered, Tara decided to forgive the imperfections of those around her, including Grace and her uncle. She had even opened the letter from her mother, the announcement of the birth of her grandchild, Thomas Meehan. Tara could now look at the picture without breaking down. He had been here. It was only a short time, but Thomas Meehan had been here on this earth, and he would live in Tara's heart, and now in the tattoo on her back, the rest of her days. Grace rocked and knitted and seemed eager to talk.
Johnny was a shy boy. Your mother always protected him.
Protected him from what?
From whom? Your grandfather. He wasn't the nicest man when he drank. And he drank a lot.
Is that why my mother left?
Grace kept knitting and rocking.
Your grandfather is buried behind the cottage.
Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that. There's no headstone, no marker.
They said it was an accident.
They?
Johnny. And your mother. They said Thomas was cleaning his gun, and it went off.
Maybe it did.
I guess we'll never know. After that, your mother left for the States and Johnny took over the business.
She was also pregnant when she left. Tara was pretty sure Grace knew that too. Her mother hadn't looked back because there were too many secrets. Too much pain. Instead of working through it, Johnny and her mother just stopped talking altogether. It hadn't been out of anger. It had been out of sadness. Shame. Sibling dynamics were complicated even without factoring in past trauma. Perhaps they each secretly blamed themselves for their past and harbored resentments at the same time. Maybe, over time, Johnny could shed more light on it. They had time. Precious, precious time. Tara stood.
I'd better get to the retail shop. We're having an official opening today. When will you be going home?
Tara stopped at the parlor doors, turned, and smiled.
I am home, she said.
Johnny Meehan popped the cork on the champagne and poured glasses for the four of them. They stood in the garden of the retail shop. Johnny and Rose, Danny and Tara, and toasted. Between the current inventory and Emmett's widow selling them back everything her husband had purchased, they were well stocked for both the mill and the shop.
Sláinte.
Sláinte, they all repeated as they clinked glasses and drank. Tara handed out the long stem roses. They would set off for the bay and say a proper goodbye to her mam. The sun was rising as they made their way toward the water, causing droplets to dance on top of the Galway Bay like diamonds. A boat horn sounded in the distance. Danny took her hand. A sense of belonging wound around her like a protective shawl. Somewhere along the way, Hound had slipped in behind them and joined the procession.
I feel love all around, Rose said.
Tara smiled. So could she.
She could feel her mother walking beside her, hand in hand with her grandson, all proceeding to the edge of the bay.
The ever-changing, wild, unpredictable Galway Bay.
The End. This is Heather O'Neill. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Murder in Galway by Carlene O'Connor. Recorded books are available wherever audiobooks are sold. Thank you for being a recorded books reader.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.